I did find that section 6331, that's levy and distraint, and this should shock anyone who's ever had a levy against them, whether on their bank or on their wages. But it says right here, levy may be made upon the accrued salary or wages of any officer, employee, or elected official of the United States by serving a notice of levy on the employer. Well, wait a second. It says, what if you're not an employee or elected official of the United States? I mean, that's who it applies to. That's not who, you know, my friend is not a she just works for the newspaper. I mean, they have no authority to levy upon an American citizen working within the 50 states who's not an employee or officer of the United States. I mean, so they just totally wiped out your due process right under the Constitution.
What is that code section? Because that would address exactly what Theodore was talking about. If somebody walked in and could quote that and show that, hey, this whole process does not apply.
Yes. 6331.
Okay.
That's in Title 26.
So there you go. Go out, get the code book, and pull that out, and you got your proof. You know, you'd walk right in there, and that would stop the process cold, because the big thing in law is jurisdiction. And what we're basically saying is the IRS has no more jurisdiction over your income and your money and garnering your wages than the King of France. Why? You know, you'd laugh if the King of France sent you a bill. Why? Because you realize, well, the King of France has no jurisdiction. Well, this is the same thing. Basically, Congress has jurisdiction over the District of Columbia, the islands, the territories, the military bases, and so forth. And that's all they were granted in the Constitution. And then whatever else is left is Article 1, Section 8, very specific powers. But beyond that, they can't do anything. Now you have a president who's interjecting the federal government in education and getting set to go to war and do just one unconstitutional thing after another, after another, after another. And, hey, it is really time to change the system. If you really want a government of, by, and for the people, there's some very serious changes that need to happen, and this is certainly one of them. And from what Jason is saying there, it sounds like there's enough people starting to become aware that it doesn't apply. We have Bob Schultz out doing his work, and the system is starting to, they're starting to realize that at the higher levels that the game is just about over. And the more that we can spread this word and go out and get this book, Goodbye April 15th, and get several copies. In fact, I think what I'm going to do, now that I'm talking to myself, sorry if anyone's out there listening, but I think the book normally costs about $40, but if you get it on a group buy thing, you can actually get it down to $20. And I think me and a couple others are going to make a group buy on that, and we'll have it available for folks at $20 rather than the $40 that it would cost you. Okay, sorry.
Great.
So, we're getting near the end of our program. We've got just a couple minutes left here. So, at this point in time, what are some of the parting thoughts you might want to share with people here?
Well, I'm just thankful that I was woken up to the truth about the income tax, and you know, I just hope that, you know, people understand that this. I mean, this is your money. We're talking about here, and you know, I show people that people start researching for themselves and you know, find out what's going on here. And you know, if you go to those websites, taxfreedom.net, taxableincome.net, sueirs.org, you're going to find that you have been defrauded. This is without question the biggest financial fraud in America's history. And feel free to, you know, call me. Again, my number is 763-1947. I don't give any advice, but I can sure answer, you know, I have the Internal Revenue Code right in my possession, and I can tell you exactly what the law says. We all need to really up, you know, have our government accountable. And that's really what all we're asking for, and that's That's what they're there for. They are there to serve us. It's not the other way around. People need to understand. They are there to serve us. We are not here to serve them. We elected them in. We can elect them out.
And also what we're really asking is for the federal government merely to obey the law, its own laws. We're not trying to, start a revolution here, but they just obey their own laws. And Jason, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
And we'll take it from there.
Very good.
All right, thank you.
You take care.
Good night, folks. I'll see you next Monday.
Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Now, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because, of course, we have with us on the line Bill Sarney. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Great to be with you this evening, and it's an exciting evening in the news.
Well, it certainly is. Well, I'm going to let you cover some of the interesting things that have come up here. I understand that Saddam Hussein has challenged George Bush to a debate, a public debate.
Well, this is a duel, if you ever heard of one. I guess it's a duel of words, and just coming over Reuters in the last 2 hours is a challenge from Saddam Hussein. He wants to openly debate George Bush, and he told him he would have his chance to make his case for war. All he had to do was, consent to this, and they would go on television worldwide. CBS News is reporting this as of this evening. Dan Rather's involved in this announcement. So it's not a side story or a misleading story. And according to Saddam, there's some quotes here. He says, my proposal is in earnest out of respect for the people of the United States and my respect for the people of Iraq and the people of the world. I call for this because war is not a joke. And so he said to the leaders of the world, why don't we use this opportunity? And went on to say, we don't have missiles that go beyond the prescribed range. We want to prove this to the world, and so on. So quite an interesting thing. The question is will the world take him up on this? And let's just say they call Saddam Hussein to the microphone and George Bush declines. Then what?
Well,
so this is going to be an interesting situation here.
Well, I'm certain that George Bush will not go on the international television with Saddam Hussein in some sort of a open, free and open discussion. But Saddam's point, and I don't know whether it's valid or not, he said, look, you know, you're criticizing me because my missiles go 15-20 miles more than they're supposed to, but the missiles we have, of course, you know, once you get them fully loaded with all their technology and a warhead, they'll only go the 90 miles. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not, and is it really worthwhile going to war because he has some weapons that are 15 miles more than they're supposed to, according to the prescription set up by the United Nations. And I'm not defending Saddam Hussein. He's a wicked, wicked, wicked individual. But I'm just not certain that a war at this time is the way we ought to go. What really bothers me, Bill, is there's so many good Americans, people that I know and that I respect, who are solidly behind this war without ever having stopped and thought of the implications. They've forgotten Vietnam. They've forgotten it was a no-win war. It was all a manipulated war. It was never fought for the reasons that the American boys we sent over there to fight and bleed and suffer and die, for the reasons they were told. The war was really fought to change America. And I fear that a war will, over in the Middle East today, will result in further changes in America and further loss of our individual freedom, and could very well provoke increasing terrorist attacks here, and actually, of course, encourage Muslims to join this radical Islamic Wahhabi movement, which, of course, is largely funded by our good friends the Saudis, and the Bush administration refuses to address that subject consistently as to conceal the truth about the Saudis' involvement in financing Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and Osama bin Laden and Hamas. In fact, as of the 29th of October last year, I had the former Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, Dor Gold, on the radio this morning, and as of the talking with him as of the 29th of October of last year, just a few months ago. Why the Saudis invited the head of Hamas to come to Saudi Arabia, and Prince Abdullah was meeting him in private sessions. Now, this is the man who heads Hamas, which is a terrorist organization, and of course they have consistently financed Hamas through their various charitable organizations, and we've done absolutely nothing to stop it. So the question is, are we really serious about fighting terrorism, or is there another agenda behind what's going on? It's going to be very interesting, though, to see the administration's response to Saddam Hussein's offer to debate on international television. Any word what the White House is saying?
Well, no response yet. And, of course, the London paper, The Independent, has said that we simply don't seem to be waiting for a declaration of war. The headline in their paper reads, United States and Britain pound Iraqi defensive in massive escalation of airstrikes. So they're actually pounding these areas where they have those so-called missiles that are not compliant and destroying them before we even talk. So if they're destroyed, why should we go to war over that? Now, that brings a question. It doesn't mean that there aren't other reasons. But here's another spectacular report here from CBS News. Inspectors call United States tips garbage. What they mean by that is the weapons investigators there, the United Nations group, has been running around Iraq looking, of course, for hidden weapons of some kind. What they've been doing is taking some tips from America, from the United States, as to where to look. So what they said was they got a tip, satellite photos reported to show new research buildings at Iraqi nuclear sites. When the UN went there, they found nothing. When the Saddam had investigate the presidential palaces, is what they said. So they went there. They thought they'd find incriminating evidence there. Of course, they found nothing. And this went on and on again. They went to look for these aluminum tubes where they were building the rockets. Again, they found no uranium there. The UN investigators said the Iraqi alibi was airtight. So there you go.
Well, I have no question that Saddam has some chemical and biological weapons sequestered where someplace around there. You know, of course, we gave it to him, and I don't know why we should be surprised. And if any of our listeners doubt that we gave Saddam Hussein the chemical or sold him the chemical and biological weapons, you just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a copy of a recent article out of certainly not a right-wing publication out of the Washington Post. Or you can certainly get the book entitled Against All Enemies, written by Seymour Hersh. We have the world's leading supply, or the last supply of the book. We bought out all there were because I figured they would never republish the book. And it's just a small and expensive little book, but it talks about how we sold Saddam the chemical and biological weapons we're so concerned that he has. So there's something almost hypocritical about that, and the average American has no idea. We sold him the chemical and biological weapons, knowing full well what an evil person we was. In fact, I even remember one of our guests one evening had been with Special Forces, and he told me that he had been actually sent to Iraq to help them use the poison gas that they were using on the Iranians. So we were certainly giving him the support for it. Now, of course, we're told that he had used poison gas on his own Kurds, and perhaps he did. I wouldn't put it back, past him. Other people say it was the Iranians that used it. I don't know. But I do know, certainly there's no question, he used the poison gas on the Iranians. He's a wicked and evil man. The world would be far better off without him. But we financed him. We kept him in power in the 1980s. We left him in power in 91, at least according to my interview with, pardon me, the book See No Evil by Robert Baer. The Iraqi people believe we intentionally blocked the Iraqi military from trying to overthrow them in 93, and again blocked them in 95 when Robert Baer was there. So, I mean, there's so many unanswered questions as just to why we seem to be so intent upon going to a war with this man who we had helped and financed and left in power. And apparently, if Robert Baer is correct from what he said, we maintained in power against two efforts to overthrow him by his own military. Let's go to Herman calling from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Very good. I heard on 60 Minutes last night they interviewed an official, and he was stating that Saddam Hussein had built a metro system under Baghdad, which was never used for that purpose, and it's multi-layered over 100 kilometers, are the estimates, and that it's filled with his chemical and, you know, biological weapons and who knows what else.
Do you have any comment on that at all, Bill?
Well, of course, we have to find evidence of this. A few weeks ago, we were saying that Iraq had these moving biological laboratories with biological type of weapons for terror. And, of course, we found that not to be true. And of course, all these things kind of come up. And without confirmation, we're holding the Iraqis guilty of these things. I have no doubt in my mind they're hiding something. If I was them, I'd be hiding something. After all, we've got a big gun pointed at their forehead, and I'm sure they have a few things. But the question is when a country like ours is the example of the world, we have to go to war for good reason. And you know, we're supposed to be striking back at terror and the very people that destroyed some towers in New York and the Pentagon. And I can't find any connection between Iraq and that terrorist act. So that becomes a difficult part of understanding what the agenda here is. And, of course, here tonight on Rents, R-E-N-S-E, Rents.com, they're reporting from Tel Aviv that the U.S. Undersecretary of State John Bolton has assured Israel that after they finish with Iraq, the United States will move on Syria and Iran as soon as they occupy Baghdad. So whether this is true or not, I don't know. But it does quote this Undersecretary of State saying he is in Tel Aviv, and this is what he's told the Israelis. It's in the newspaper, the Haaretz, and, of course, this is published in a newspaper there in Israel. So they seem to be citing their facts pretty well. So the question is that our whole agenda to take over the Middle East? Maybe it is. If it is, we have to have good reason, and I guess we just become a conquering country and to hell with the rest of the world. Is that what our country stand for? I don't know. We have to ask ourselves what we're going there for, and regardless, our leaders have to make a case to get the world to go with us now, not only just, you know, our own troops and our own citizens. So once the shots start firing, we obviously are not going to have much choice but to support our own troops. And, of course, then this gets to be an us-and-them thing by a long shot. So any dissent we have for the war, our last shot at it, is before they really do open up into an all-out land war.
Well, of course, I'm not at all surprised. I haven't seen that article by Rentz. But I would not be at all surprised if that weren't the real agenda. And for those people out there in the listening audience who have any question that the driving force behind everything going on today is empire, let me point out that you can go up on the web and look up the Project for a New American Century. The Statement of Principles that was published back in June of 1973. It was signed by 26 people, 12 of whom are members of the Council on Foreign Relations, and also by non-CFR people like Gary Bauer, leader of the conservative Christian movement, William Bennett, the champion of the conservative Christian values, Frank Gaffney, a very well-known writer. You'll see his articles in the Washington Times. Dick Cheney, William Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, basically the Bush War Cabinet, all signed this together. 26 people signed it, basically talking about how the real purpose of American policy henceforth would be the creation of a new international order under American control. And then, of course, they came out with their Rebuilding America's Defense Program, and we'll be covering this, I think, in next month's newsletter, although if anybody would like to verify what I'm saying, I'll be glad to get the information to them so they can check it out. And Rebuilding American Defenses, they said, oh boy, we're going to have troops all throughout the world, just like, well, having the cavalry on the old frontier. And I'm reading this, they're talking about how we're going to have our troops permanently stationed in the Middle East, and we're going to have our troops permanently stationed throughout Asia and in Southeast Asia and throughout the world. And they're talking about an empire, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, remember what happened to the Roman Empire. Remember what happened to the British Empire. And, of course, I don't believe they're being forthright or honest at all about anything that's going on today. And I would like to suggest that if we really do advance from Iraq into Iran and Syria, and we've got far more people than we need over there right now, I think, to take Iraq, there can be tremendous repercussions right here at home. Because our economy is not that strong, and all we would need would be one more two major terrorist attacks in America before they would take away all of our freedom at home in the name of pursuing this new world order and the new world religion, which I think is really the major motivation. This has nothing to do with Iraq. It has to do with a globalist foreign policy. Are you aware of that PNAC report, Bill?
I don't think I'm completely familiar with it. You know, they have said lately here that George Bush and America faces a larger group to convince, and that is world opinion now. In the past, we just had to kind of convince our own people. Now, we have internet, we have satellites and television everywhere, and the world's a smaller place. And it's also more of a fishbowl. We just can't announce that the Gulf of Tonkin occurred. It never did. And then have us go to war because the so-called North Vietnamese fired on our Navy boats. It never occurred, but we couldn't prove it. Well, today the world's a smaller place, and we can't quite get away with these same type of propaganda. There's a thing circulating on the Internet right now called 50 Questions About Iraq, and it's running around with information, you know, that the world gets to see and read. And, you know, it asks questions like, how many people were involved in Iraq in September 11? None, you know, and they were all Saudi Arabians and so on. How many inspections were there in Iraq in 1998 and 1999? 300. How many of those inspections did they have problems in? Just 5. And it goes on and on. You know, we apparently left 40 tons of depleted uranium in Iraq and Kuwait after the Gulf War 12 years ago. We lost 40 tons of it there. Now, I imagine if we find uranium there now, we're going to blame it on Iraq when we're the ones who left it there. So this kind of stuff is circulating around. Whether it's true or not, whether it's anti or reverse propaganda or not, it seems like this data seems to be confirmed and true. But nonetheless, it's reverse propaganda of some kind. And the point is that you just can't go out there without unconvincing reasons to go fight a war, and of course even lose your own troops, regardless if we don't give a rip about the Iraqis. Now, there's some concern about their children and obviously the civilians involved, but and then that can be used to play people into never go to war with anyone. But regardless of this, it's a concern. There were over 1 million refugees in the last war we fought in that region, and there'll certainly be as many or more this time. And we have to think about it. The UN says they're not equipped. They don't have the budget to feed these people. So who's going to do that? And, of course, the question is, a lot of countries are involved in our war effort or have been induced into it due to payoffs and various things, rebuilding projects in Iraq. This is how you induce other countries. Japan, Pakistan, India, all have been given certain kinds of rebuilding projects. And, of course, then when they get the payoff, then they say, okay, fine, we'll go along with the war. So that's how you induce these countries. Russia's in on it because they're planning on getting some oil contracts out of the thing. So this is how it goes. Will the United States, do we have a leader that's capable, like a Kennedy, like a Ronald Reagan, that can sway world opinion? I don't think we have.
Well, I'll tell you what, the program Herman was talking about last night really was very impressive. It was a very soft-spoken, very intelligent Iraqi, gentleman who had spent 11 years in Saddam's prison, most of it in solitary confinement. And he gave a very good presentation. But one of the things he said really disturbed me, and that is that the people of Iraq do not trust the United States. And they don't trust the United States because following or at the end of the Gulf War, the American president promised the people of the South, the Shiites in the South and the Kurds in the North, that they would rise up to overthrow Saddam Hussein. We would be there to help them. And they did exactly what they were asked to do, following the promise of an American president, the president's father. And he lied to them. And they were slaughtered. And hundreds of thousands of them died because they believed the Americans. And as this gentleman said on 60 Minutes last night, and I was ashamed when he said it, he said the people of Iraq do not believe America. They do not trust America. And I think that that's something every listener should think about. If the people of Iraq do not trust the president's father because he lied to them, can we trust the president? Is he telling the truth? Is he being completely forthright? And, of course, the real thing, I think anybody with an ounce of intelligence has to know, 15 of the 19 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia. There have been efforts to actually file lawsuits against the Sauds and against certain of the Saudi princes who've been financing al-Qaeda. And if anybody doubts that al-Qaeda and Hamas and the terrorist movement has been financed by the Saudi Arabians, we have a new book. It's called Hatred's Kingdom. It's published by Random House. It's written by Ambassador Dor Gold, a former Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, a brilliant book, and he goes into the whole background of how Saudi Arabia is behind this whole radical Islamic terrorist movement. And so despite that fact, and despite the fact that bin Laden actually came from Saudi Arabia, and when the Afghans and when the Saudis and the Sudan people had both offered to turn him over to the Saudi Arabians, they wouldn't take him back. Despite that fact, why, of course, we went to war with Afghanistan. Now we're going to war with Iraq. And why don't we demand the Saudis stop financing the terrorists? The president has said, if you're harboring or financing the terrorists, you're the enemy. And that's Saudi Arabia. So why doesn't he do anything about that? Or is it because there are very, very close ties between his father and the Sauds, between his father and the bin Laden family, between his father and the Carlyle Group, which will, of course, profit tremendously with the rebuilding of Iraq? You know, I think there's so many unanswered questions out there. Herman, did you have anything else to say? How did you feel about the Iraqi who said how the people of Iraq don't trust America? And didn't that make you feel just a little ashamed?
Well, it did.
A president who would lie?
Well, it did, and he said two other things. He said he feels that America is rushing into this war and that we might not have all the intelligence we need, and then that what he fears is some type of huge humanitarian catastrophe. You know, it's many people will die.
And of course, you know, one of the justifications for going into Iraq is that we want to protect the Iraqi people from the wicked Saddam Hussein. And that's a very nice thought. But then we're saying if Saddam uses chemical weapons, we'll drop a nuclear bomb. Where are we going to drop it? Are we going to drop it in the desert? Or are we going to drop it on those people that we're trying to save from the wicked Saddam Hussein? Then we're going to kill him because we want to get rid of Saddam Hussein. I mean, this is organized madness, and people have forgotten that when you go to war, it's like drawing a wild card. You never know what's going to happen. And what will be the outcome of the war? I hope it's brief and to the point with very little loss of life. But where is the outcry from the Americans who should remember Vietnam and who should remember Korea and should remember the Second World War and when we dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki when the Japanese have been trying to surrender for 6 months and we wouldn't let them? There are lots of unanswered questions. Hey, thanks so much, Herman.
Okay, thank you for the program.
All right, bye-bye and God bless you. Well, Bill, you know, there are so many fascinating aspects of what's going on today. And, you know, the trouble is that these things are not being well debated. In fact, I'm going to have a gentleman, I think, tomorrow on who supports the war, so we can at least have some sort of a debate on this, because we're not hearing this. We either hear the people, everything the president says is good, or, you know, and in fact, I've been equated of being sounding more and more like Barbara Streisand because I oppose the war. Talk about guilt by association. And we got John calling from Post Falls, Idaho. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hello there. Not too bad. Just wanted to ask you guys, put yourself in the shoes of any Islamic terrorist. Assuming for the sake of discussion, America's impending Iraqi campaign goes perfectly well. I don't believe that it will, and I hope I'm wrong on that. But assuming there's minimal casualties, regime change, etc.
Let's all pray for that.
Yeah. Do you really believe getting rid of Saddam is going to shut down the international arms bazaar and tear weapons or materials? What about China, North Korea, or even France or Germany?
Well, let's talk about Saudi Arabia. Our good friends, the Saudis, who financed this whole thing, and 15 of the 19 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia. Why don't we ever talk about that? Why don't we ask why our government allowed all these people to come in when every one of them filled out their forms wrong? Do you know that on the morning of the attack, that nine of the terrorists were actually stopped at the airports? And somebody gave orders that they were all to be released. Isn't that interesting? So they could get on the planes. If you'd like to see that article, I still have it. You know, I read about six or seven newspapers because every once in a while they tell the truth. What are your thoughts on what John is saying?
Well, certainly the WorldNet Daily this morning pointed the finger at Germany for supplying arms to Iraq. He's dead right. Are we going after Iraq? Or how about ourselves? We certainly pointed the finger here at this evening and shown that we've certainly stocked the Iraqis with biological weapons. They used them against Iran in that war against the Iranians, and we didn't object at the time. So
that's a chemical weapons.
Those were chemical weapons at the time, correct. So these are the kinds of information. I believe your caller is exactly right. It's not going to stop that part of the objective, no. We still see these kinds of weapons being sold and transferred, and apparently we're completely aware of it. So I'm not sure that it'll stop that whatsoever. We have such interesting anti-war propaganda. Just to go on with this list of 50 things that's going around the internet, one of the things they're saying is the United States spends so much money on defense and obviously in its weapons budget and so on. And it says, what percent of the U.S. military spending budget would ensure the essentials of life for everyone in the world, according to the United Nations? Well, 10% of our defense budget, $40 billion, would provide the essentials of life for everyone in the world. Now, you see, when you get that kind of, you can call it propaganda, misinformation, information, you can call it accurate or inaccurate, but it's circulating the internet, you see, and people see this, and they wonder, boy, this country is the warrior. The other guys, what are they doing?
So, well, you know what's really so interesting, and this is a very valid figure. We have a defense budget. I think it'll be $370 billion this year. That is as much as the next 20 nations in the world's defense budget combined. Now, I'm all in favor of defense for the United States. The problem is we don't have any defense for the United States.
We don't have any enemies either. We don't have any real big enemies. They keep doing all this phony stuff about North Korea has this and that, and somebody has a missile pointed at us and can get it here. That's all mythology. It's all if or could or might, you know, at some time in the future. None of it's for real today. South Korea dismissed this whole idea that North Korea has any kind of nuclear weapon that's ready. We're getting all this kind of, demonizing and saber-rattling and workup. Understand, our military budget is so big, when you can feed the world off just 10% of it, understand that our own home guard here is collapsing, our own defense against terror is down, we haven't improved the holes in our own wall, and it comes at a time when, let's say, Medicare, for instance, is collapsing. Our healthcare system is collapsing, and yet we're running off to war.
And there's something basically wrong with this picture. And what I'd like to suggest, as Robert Byrd suggested in his speech, that all of our troops are going to be overseas. We're taking our National Guard. We're taking our reserves. What would happen if something happened at home? Who would defend our homeland? Would it be Canadian troops? Would it be Mexican troops? Would it be Chinese troops? We'll be back here in just a moment to discuss this. John, if you want to hang on, you certainly may.
Right.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our special guest this evening is Bill Sardi, and we've got John Collings from Post Falls, and we're just going to have sort of an open discussion about some of the things that are being discussed in the media tonight, and if you have any suggestions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, I think we need a strong military. But that military is not being used to defend America. It's being used to push this American empire, the New World Order, the New World Religion. And that is really what I'm concerned about. Bill, before I forget this, I want to get your website out for so people will know how to get there. And for our listeners who don't know Bill, he is a health journalist. He researches health matters. He's written a number of fascinating books, and I hope you'll mention those. You can go to his website. And you'll get a lot of great information. So why don't you just tell us, our listeners, before I forget, how to get your information.
The website is askbillsardi.com, S-A-R-D-I at the end, and you'll find reports there. There's a current report there on cholesterol drugs and why they're so dangerous. You can download my free e-book, which is The Collapse of Conventional Medicine. Get lots of other free information there about autism, smallpox, anthrax, natural antibiotics, which you ought to have in your home, and lots of other health tips on vitamins and minerals. Learn about my books, what's best in multivitamins, the iron time bomb, how iron accumulates in our bodies and makes us prone to disease. One of my newest books, How to Live 100 Years Without Growing Old. And so there's lots of wonderful information there that you can acquire, and a lot of it for free, I should say. So,
what about that book about the biblical things about food and medicine?
Yeah, we do have a wonderful book, The Power of God, The Power of Healing. It's my 5-year effort of researching things in the Bible and, of course, in healing throughout history. And it gives the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Apostolic Era, all the miracles of that time, all the ways that they stayed healthy during the biblical times, the foods that they ate, the herbs that they had, the various things that they learned at the time. They even knew what germs were. They just couldn't see them under a microscope, but they certainly knew what germs were. After all, at the time when they came back from war, they burned their clothing and cleansed all their war instruments with hyssop, which was a cleanser at the time. So they knew about germs and disease and the spread of it. And you're going to find all these wonderful lessons that are all in that wonderful book, The Power of God, The Power of Healing, and I've had a wonderful time sharing that book with so many other people. It's written for Christians, But anybody would enjoy reading it.
And I know my wife loves that book. In fact, she won't let me have that. You know, that's her book. Anyway.
That's all at AskBillSardi.com, and I'll allow all your listeners to go there as soon as they support Radio Liberty.
All right, fine. Anyway, John, did you have anything else you wanted to comment on?
You know, just briefly, one of the most truly troubling aspects of this proposed war is, of course, the enormous cost, the $15 billion shakedown from Turkey we witnessed today. I'm curious at the beginning.
I thought we offered him 26. What did it end up with, you know?
Five outright and 10 in loan guarantees.
All right.
But I could maybe buy some of the hypotheticals involved. You know, they're talking unprecedented preemptive strikes, et cetera, et cetera. If we were truly defending our own borders, or if we were truly serious about missile defense, but what are we buying the time for? We're not really even proposing any of these things, let alone carrying them out.
But you see, this whole thing has nothing to do with defending America. This is about empire, and when you understand that, and you get this project for the New American Century and their report on rebuilding America's defenses, and if you want to look this, do you have access to the Internet, John?
I do.
I'll go up and look up www.austinuu.org.
Okay.
AustinUU.org, and look under Sermons for Oil, Arrogance, and War, I think is the title. And then you'll get all the websites to certainly the Rebuilding America's Defenses. And then if you want the report on the Project for the New American Century, which came out in 1997, you can look that up, Project for a New American Century, and if you don't have it, give me a call and off the air, and I'll be glad to get to the website. And that's the one where you see Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz were planning on this whole war back in 97, long before George Bush ever became president. Isn't that interesting? This
Very
whole
interesting.
Idea of a new international order, that was their word, with America leading the world.
Well, of course, what's the implication there? The implication is 9/11 was all something that was allowed to happen. That's the implication.
As it said in their report, Rebuilding America's Defenses, we're never going to go through this this change, I think they call it a transformation, something like that, unless there is a catastrophic and catalytic incident like another Pearl Harbor. Well, of course, a catalyst is something you put in a chemical reaction to make it happen. And certainly there was a catalytic and catastrophic event on September 11th. This report came out in the year 2000, September 2000, just a year before the catastrophic and catalytic event took place. And, of course, we have to ask why there were no planes in the air that morning. Why we had no idea this was coming, and yet, of course, if you read the book Hatred's Kingdom, I just talked about by Ambassador Dor Gold, he talks about how Saudis and were holding meetings, and they were talking about to use airplanes to crash into buildings, as a weapon, use airplanes as a weapon.
Well, something was never reported widely is that the military had AWACS planes up in the air. What were AWACS planes doing there for the public that doesn't understand? AWACS planes are command and control centers where they have large radar right on the plane. They have a command and control center there to run a war out of that. What were they doing in the air on that day over Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., and other areas? What were they? We told all aircraft to land. You can't just take AWACS planes off that fast. So they were up in the air before we sent out those fighters there. So, you know, what were they there? What were they doing?
And those are troubling questions.
On their radar systems, everything that was going on. They knew everything that was going on.
Okay, anything else, John?
Very troubling questions, and there are also incursions into controlled airspace, repeated transits of airliners that should not have even happened without an investigation at all. But I just finished by saying that I agree with Buchanan. We ought to have a republic and not an empire.
Amen to that. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to have your say, here it's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're really in favor of the war, And I had a couple of callers over the weekend on another network we do, and they, the honest, sincere people saying, look, what are we going to do about Saddam Hussein? If we don't take him out, what's going to happen? You know, he's just going to keep, he's eventually going to get nuclear weapons, and maybe he'll use them against us at some time in the future. And maybe he's going to give them to the terrorists. Maybe he's going to give them to Osama bin Laden, if we don't get rid of him right now. And, of course, there are a lot of people out there who've been swept up with all of this propaganda. And, ladies and gentlemen, it's just like it was back at the time of the First World War, when the American people didn't want to go to war. But, J.P. Morgan and some of his associates bought up the editorial policies of 25 major American newspapers, and they told us about the wicked Huns raping and ravishing the Belgian women and cutting off their breasts, and that cutting off the hands of the little Belgian boys. It wasn't a bit of truth in any of the stories, but the day after day, week after week, month after month, eventually the propaganda took its toll. And I'd like to suggest that back at the time of the First World War, they didn't have propaganda anything like we have today, with the availability of television. And, of course, you never hear the other side discussed intelligently, or very, very rarely. Well, you know, is there anything else we ought to talk about as far as the coming conflict, other than the fact that we certainly want to pray that it'll be over quickly, with as little loss of life on the part of American, our men, and as far as the Iraqis? And I'm so concerned about the possibility of an attack on Israel, and perhaps even Israel retaliating with nuclear weapons, or are using nuclear weapons. If we do something like that, why, we're going to unleash, the genie will be out of the bottle and we'll never get it back again.
Well, 12 years ago, we killed 35,000 Iraqis as civilians. We incurred casualties on our side, zero.
Well, we had about 100, something like that.
Right. There were behind the lines and other activities, but in the actual war up front, there were no casualties there. So we had very low or next to zero. This is the kind of thing that went on. We certainly don't have much of a change in history. There's an article here on my desk about Rupert Murdoch. He's the fellow who owns News Corp, 140 different publications around the world, including, in addition to those, newspapers and magazines. He owns, of course, Fox Network and many other television networks. And he's come out openly for the war and blatantly just says, let's go in there and get their oil. That's why we're going. And he has no qualms about it, says that's the reason. And, of course, to the beat of a drum, all 140 publications are beating the war drum, all of those television stations. They're all in concert. Just watch Fox News every night, and you'll see, while I try to get a little tennis match going, of course, they just throw 10 tennis balls on one side of the court all at one time, and, of course, whoever's against the war is just beat up. So, you know, it's really just rigged, and, of course, we don't have open debate. Now, it's interesting, though, we have had open debate in some city areas, and apparently now, after some town hall meetings and so on, Chicago, Philadelphia, Detroit, and now Los Angeles, each one of their city councils has adopted a resolution against the war in Iraq. Can you believe this? In the United States, we actually have this kind of division. These cities are adopting resolutions against war. So,
don't forget Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz was the first city in the entire nation to come out with a resolution against the war, and I think Berkeley has as well. And, of course, everybody's going to say, look, these are a lot of communists, and you're absolutely right. There are communists against this war, but the question is, who's financing the communists? We go back to Vietnam. Who financed the anti-war movement back there? Why, the same people who financed the war. You've got a controlled opposition, and most of the communists aren't smart enough to realize they're being manipulated. And I agree with you that I think there are a lot of good people who are against this war. But then, of course, we have this great march on the 15th of February. And so I went up on the web to find out who was behind the march. Why, the Communist Party of Australia, pardon me, of Argentina, Communist Party of Austria, Communist Party of Bohemian Moldavia in Czechoslovakia, the Communist Party of Lebanon, all the usual suspects, the Green Party. And, of course, everybody's going to say, well, see, it was the communists that organized this in 50 nations across the world. But you go back and you study who financed the communist, you know, after the Second World War here in the United States, all the communist-run organizations, Rockefeller Foundation, Carnegie Foundation, Ford Foundation, who financed the anti-Vietnam movement. We have a book called The Strawberry Statement, written by a man in the SDS talking about how Exxon people were going around hiring radicals to go out and demonstrate against the war. And we know very well that the battle in Seattle that they had, all these demonstrations against the World Trade Organization, funded by many major corporations, funding, Ted Turner was funding a ruckus, which was actually training these demonstrators to go to Seattle to actually demonstrate. And actually, what were they demonstrating for? They were demonstrating for exactly what the great corporations wanted, that the World Trade Organization would come out and make demands that in the countries that go into the World Trade Organization, there'd be environmental and labor controls, so that there'd be increased control over labor and environment in all these countries. So, you know, it's all, well, you have a controlled opposition, you really have no opposition at all.
Well, the Los Angeles Times today saying Republican leaders are encountering more anti-war sentiments from, of course, their citizens back at home and having a hard time. They're out on a limb, it says, with the president for this war and trying to handle some of the questions back at home. I don't think we've ever quite seen a situation like this, because here the Associated Press talking about human shields begin deploying in Iraq, and now people that are against the war are going to Iraq and posting themselves in key locations. These are people from Western nations just posting themselves there and saying, if you want to bomb us, you'll kill us too. So they're acting as human shields. I don't think we've ever quite seen a situation like this in the world.
Well, you know, as I read that, Bill, I had mixed emotions. On one hand, I thought, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard, and maybe one of the bravest things I've ever heard as well. You know, there are a lot of the people on the left who feel very, very deeply. I know some of the anti-war activists here in Santa Cruz who have been anti-war activists since Vietnam, and they really feel that war is wrong, and they're willing not only to invest their time, but invest their lives. And I'll say these are very, very brave people. I think it's an exercise in futility, but I'll have to admit that at least they believe in something enough to die for it. I wonder how many Christians in America believe in something enough to die for. And if you don't believe in something enough to die for, then you really don't have very much to live for, and you really don't believe in much of anything. And that's one of the big problems we have today. And I'm often reminded of what Whitaker Chambers said in his book, Witnesses, I Remember It. And he was asked, you know, if he hated Alger Hiss, and he said, how could I ever hate anybody who agreed with me that, you know, that life is not worth living for which a man is willing to die at any moment? And I shall never forget that. Alger Hiss believed in what he was doing and was willing to die for it, as did Whitaker Chambers. But what is the average American? He's willing to send our boys over there to fight and die, but I wonder how many people are supporting the war now would be willing to die to go over there into Iraq. And I don't think very many of them want to send their sons and daughters over there to die. It's all right if it's somebody else's sons and daughters, but at least these human shields are really willing to commit their lives to this, to what they believe in. And I'll have to admit, I think it's foolish, it's stupid, and they have my respect.
Well, as soon as we say we're going to defend the Constitution, by the way, our Constitution calls for a defense, not so much an offense, and it calls for more concern about corruption inside our own country rather than it does from foreign powers. But we were to be suspicious of our own country and keep the balance of power between three, of course, agencies of government, the Congress and the courts and, of course, the president. So we've lost all this. We have too much power on one side. One man can lift his hand. We've seen all these, anything from jokes to cartoons about the presidency and being a king, a kingship, and so on. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that's going on. And, of course, we have to question, are we really the country that we established originally so that we would have balance of power, that we would have reason to to form a defense and not be so ill-tempered to go out and fight a war to stop something that we just haven't even filled our own the holes in our own wall as far as defense goes. So we still let people just walk over the border, and yet we're claiming that we should go off and fight a war elsewhere. So it doesn't make any sense.
And, of course, we're not doing anything about the Saudi Arabia that's financing this whole world terrorist movement. This whole world Islamic movement ties right back to Islamic Wahhabism.
Well, we need to understand, remember the war, what we had down there in Colombia with, what did we call it, the Sandinistas and all that?
That was Nicaragua.
Well, Nicaragua, excuse me, with Reagan and all that. That, you know, when we didn't have money online, on budget for that, we went to the Saudis, and the Saudis gave us millions of dollars around the U.S. Constitution, around the U.S. budget, so we could do some covert actions there in Nicaragua, you see. And so, see, the Saudis for years have been kind of an off-budget source of money for things that we wanted to do. And again, then you have to ask yourself, if they have traditionally been that, then what was their role in 9/11? They supplied the people. They supplied the money. Who was giving the instructions?
Well, you know, Chris, the interesting thing about the Sandinista, which nobody ever wants to talk about, is why did the Sandinista come to power? They came to power because the United States government intentionally toppled Somoza. And we gave him, we undercut him in every way we could. We decided he was going to be taken out of power. And when he took out of power, why, of course, there was nobody else to fill the vacuum but the Sandinista. Then, of course, we organized the Contras, and now we've got, once again, the controlled opposition. And until the American people understand that we create these problems to justify a solution, why we can't understand much of what's going on today. And then, of course, because of the situation in Nicaragua, then we could justify the drug smuggling. And if anybody doubts that the CIA is involved in drug smuggling, you ought to go to Michael Rupert's website. And, of course, he has links to the CIA where they admit they're drug smuggling, or certainly get the book Into the Buzzsaw by where we have an essay by Gary Webb, who did the definitive work and the articles in the San Jose Mercury on Dark Alliance about the CIA and the drug smugglers. Of course, it cost him his job because you're not supposed to get that information out in America. But, you know, what happened in Nicaragua, you create the Sandinista, you create the Contras, and boy, now we've got a real conflict down there. But we've got to come up with the money somehow to fund the Contras. So, well, you know, drug smuggling is a way to do it. And the people who begin looking behind the scenes say, well, you know, maybe they were justified after all. Who's really getting hurt except the people in the inner city?
I just want to ask your listeners, because we're talking about planned opposition here. Let me just take you to a different arena in just 10 seconds here. Let's just go to baseball for a minute. Isn't it interesting that the teams that seem to make it to the World Series and the playoffs lately have just built a new ballpark? You see, they need the money, and therefore that they trade them all the good players so they can pay off the ballparks. Do you think there's any real competition left in baseball? If you do, then you've been fooled. And that's how easy it is to get fooled about war and other things. I'm just trying to make an analogy there. It's very easy for us to get fooled by just what we see on television, because we can't see behind the scenes as to, you know, what really is happening, who funds who makes it all happen. So, you know, the Angels last year, they had a wonderful team. They had a lot of good players that were there. They started off losing every game, and all of a sudden they win the World Series, and they were $100 million in debt, and they were the team that needed the most financial help. So, see, you just have to go look, and you might find behind the scenes, behind the curtains, the real reasons for these things.
Oh, well, very interesting. I don't know anything at all about baseball, so
But it just shows us how we can get fooled because we all watch it. We all happen to see it for a few minutes or whatever we have time to do. It's so easy to be deceived today, and I tell people that most of the news that we see today on television is planned. It's already been produced. If you think those people that stand up at halftime of a football game and wave a certain flag or a sign or have that funny colored hair or whatever, those people are planted in the audience. They actually have them on the production log, scan down to seat so-and-so, row so-and-so, and show this guy at 12:06. I mean, you know, they know these things. They know how to produce these things, and this is what it's done. So you think it's spontaneous. It's really all planned.
Anyway, well, if we're just about out of time, do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners tonight, Bill?
Well, certainly we live in troubled times. More information could build anxiety. I think it's time to have a faith in God that built our country, and to know who that God is, and to hold him close to your heart, because I believe somehow we're going to, the good people in this country and God is going to prevail in some way.
Well, I think we're in for very, very, very difficult times, and I think only our faith is going to see us through, and otherwise I think people are going to be frightened to death. I got a call from a lady this morning who lives, I won't mention where she lives, but just obsessed with fear of what's going on, and all I could do was tell her, just put your faith in the Lord, because that's all that's going to see you through. And if we can perhaps put that message out to many of our listeners, then, of course, it will help them in the very, very difficult times that I am firmly convinced lie ahead. God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us tonight, Bill.
Good night, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, our guest this evening has been Bill Sardi, and I hope you'll seriously think about going to his website. That's BillSardi.com. And, of course, if you want some more information on this book, Hatred's Kingdom, we talked about, excellent, excellent book on the Saudi Arabian. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and, of course, this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there across America listening to us, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's really how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. And it's really exciting, as we've seen, starting with one station and now up to about 50 outlets across America. Today we did our first try at syndicating a program. Of course, we don't have any stations pulling it down, but we just wanted to make sure that things would work and work efficiently while we were up on the web, and we're going to be working with this for a couple of weeks or so, just to make sure everything's in good shape before we proceed. But of course, it's vitally important that that we get more and more stations listening to our program. So look around your community, and if there are any stations you have there that might be willing to pull down our programs, they'll be available on the satellite, on two different satellites, and you can contact us. We'll get the information to you, and hopefully we can get more stations to pull down our program. We can reach more people. And of course, the way you do a barter situation is the station that pulls it down gets 7 minutes an hour, and the people who have the satellites get 7 minutes an hour, and we probably don't get any time at all, but that isn't important. We'll tell you here at the end of the program about some of the items that are available through Radio Liberty, and right now I certainly want to mention, if you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, that'll be the February newsletter. It's going to contain Senator Robert Byrd's speech on the war. And although I disagree with Senator Byrd, and he, of course, is a supporter of the United Nations, and some of the things he said in the speech are very, very supportive of the United Nations, but we've summarized his speech, have almost all of it there, except some of the attacks on the Bush administration. Maybe I should have left him in, but they really detracted from the message he was putting out about the war and why he objected to the war. Now, you may support the war, but you may very well be interested in what Senator Byrd has to say, because I think it was a brilliantly crafted speech, and I think that his words and his warnings are something everyone should hear. So if you'd like to get a copy of our February newsletter, you just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the February newsletter. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, that's the same telephone number that you will actually be calling. And then, of course, we hope you'll tell others about our website at radioliberty.com, and our internet audience is growing, and you'd be amazed at how many people call and say how much they've actually learned listening to our programs and beginning to have everything they believe challenged, and then being able to begin analyzing and interpreting events accurately, no longer being influenced by the controlled media. So, right now we're really, I'm sure we've almost doubled our regular listening internet audience over this last year. And hopefully we can double it again. And, you know, as we double it and keep doubling it, why, we'll begin having an increasing impact. Well, this is the time I'm going to have to say goodbye to our listeners up there in the great Northwest. And so we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And we'll be back here in just a few minutes to complete this program. Well, good evening, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, you know, as we're looking over here at our board, I hope we're going to have our guest on. We're supposed to have Larry Nichols on tonight, and we haven't heard from Larry for a long time. You remember, he used to talk about, of course, Bill Clinton, and of course, he was sure that Bill Clinton was not going to leave office back there when he was supposed to leave. You know, we voted out of office, but, you know, you never want to make a prediction as to what's going to happen. I can tell you, I think we're going to be in some difficult times with the Gulf War, and I hope and pray that I'm wrong, but I'm not going to tell you definitely that I know what the future is going to hold, but I am very, very concerned about many, many things that are going on today. And let me just share a few of them with you until we get Larry on. One of them, of course, is the effort to convince the American people that there's going to be a smallpox attack. Now, you know, we've seen this effort on the part of the administration to vaccinate first 500,000 healthcare workers and then up to 10 or 11 million healthcare workers. Now, we know the background, for those of you who don't remember, that basically the World Health Organization declared smallpox eradicated from the world. And so sometime in the mid-1970s, they just suddenly made it that you couldn't get smallpox vaccination anywhere in the world. And they said, we're not going to vaccinate anybody now because there are potential complications with smallpox vaccination. About 2 people in a million will die. There are maybe maybe 10 or 15 cases of encephalitis with this, and certainly some people can actually get the vaccinia infection. In other words, the vaccinia, which is the virus that's used, it's really a cowpox virus that has been attenuated, but you know, this can, of course, be spread from the individual to other people if they have an altered immune system. And of course, on rare occasions, people will get a widespread dermatitis from this, and certainly you shouldn't be giving the cowpox or the smallpox to people with altered immune system or eczema or pregnant women. And so they're probably maybe up to a fifth or a quarter of the population that shouldn't be vaccinated at all anyway. Now, that's a little strange because we never used to be that concerned about it, but now they're really, they point out that they're already, that there are a lot of complications with smallpox vaccine. But if you look at it, 2 out of a million, maybe 10 or 15 out of a million, that's a pretty small incidence of the disease. So, but they, in other words, the complication rate with smallpox is nowhere near what it would be with hepatitis B or many of the other the vaccinations that are given. And we know that, for instance, about 1 in every 250 children now is autistic, and that's gone up maybe from 1 or 2 in 10,000 to 1 in 250. And, of course, so often it comes on immediately after a vaccination, and yet they insist on vaccination. So why are they so concerned about 2 people dying and maybe 10 or 15 people in a million having a complication when they're not concerned about the complications of MMR vaccine and certainly the hepatitis B vaccine, one of the most reactive and dangerous vaccines ever given? There's so many complications from that and deaths from it. So, you know, we have to ask, you know, what's this all about for the smallpox? Well, you remember, of course, that it was some months ago that they convened a meeting at the CDC in Atlanta, Georgia, and they brought in people who are experts on smallpox. And I'm not an expert on smallpox. I've never seen a case of smallpox, and I hope I never do see one. But these were people who studied it, or some of the older people who were around when we had smallpox or were involved in doing away with smallpox in the world. And of course, the public health effort to ring vaccinate areas where there were smallpox. And what they did, of course, was they, if somebody had a case of smallpox, they would vaccinate everybody who came in contact with them. And then those people would not get the smallpox. And so suddenly there was no more smallpox in the world. And there really hasn't, to my knowledge, been a case of smallpox in many, many years. Well, then they got all these experts together at the Centers for Disease Control, and they said, look, we, of course, don't think that you ought to be vaccinating very many people because we don't know that there's any reason to think that there's going to be any smallpox in the world. I mean, why would we think that there's going to be smallpox now? The only people who have it are the United States and Russia. And, of course, the fact that anybody else would have this. I mean, nobody else has this to our knowledge. And so before we start vaccinating large numbers of people and taking a chance on getting complications, even if, you know, the chances are very, very small, remember that first thing in medicine is first do no harm. And so let's wait until we get some smallpox before we start massive vaccination. Well, of course, this report put in by the experts were, you know, and they had the hearings down there and the people got up and testified. But you have to understand most of the hearings are really, you will see them in the local community. They'll put together a committee on, are we going to close schools in Santa Cruz where I live? And the committee comes up and they says, yes, we think we need to close these 2 schools. And then the officials who have the power say, yeah, well, thank you very much for your report. We're going to control other schools. Or I've seen this, you know, looking for a site for a high school and the people will come up with a site and but the people who have the power have already made the decision. They have a completely different agenda, and they pick a different site. Well, the same thing happened with the smallpox issue, because, of course, the people said that, you know, that they certainly didn't think we ought to be immunizing a lot of people, maybe 50,000, I think it was, healthcare workers, so there'd be somebody that could be flown in to do the immunizations if there were any cases of smallpox, but don't go doing large-scale vaccinations unless we know there's going to be smallpox. Well, of course, the administration totally ignored that. And they've said that they, first of all, they've got enough smallpox for everybody in the United States. And they've got enough smallpox for the people in Israel. And there may be enough smallpox vaccine for one or two of the European countries, but certainly not for the entire world. And then, of course, the recent smallpox vaccination program is ground to a halt. I mean, most hospitals won't do this. The nurses' union says, look, we're not going to give our recommend our people take the smallpox vaccine unless you're going to be responsible for the complications. The government doesn't want to be responsible for the complications. They just want you to go ahead and take it. And they said, look, I mean, we can go ahead and give the smallpox vaccinations. And then, of course, what happens if the people, healthcare workers, give it to somebody working, or somebody, a patient in the hospital? Who's going to be responsible for that patient? And so right now, nobody's getting vaccinated. The whole program is stopped. And the people of the CDC are saying, well, we really need to get back to this because, well, we can't give you the confidential intelligence that we have. But, of course, there is, and we can't even discuss it because it's secret, but we really need to get the smallpox vaccination out. We need to get the 10 million people vaccinated, so we will have a staff of people to go around the country and vaccinate all of America within 10 days if smallpox comes. Well, why vaccinate everybody in the country if smallpox comes? Why not just do ring vaccinations like they initially did? What do they know that the rest of us don't know? And if there is confidential information, why won't they release it? Well, everything is covered up. Everything is secret. We have to maintain this as a secret in the name of national security. This is a free country, supposedly. And whose security are we really trying to protect? We're still suppressing the information on who killed President Kennedy 40 years ago. We're still concealing evidence and information and records on Pearl Harbor that happened 60 years ago. What's that have to do with national security? Are we afraid the Japanese are going to find out we broke their code? And I'd like to suggest that they're concealing the truth from the American people. Now, first of all, if you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. I'd like to get your thoughts on what we're talking about. And, is there really a problem? Or, you know, is the implications of this effort to have enough vaccine for the entire American population and maybe the population of one or two European countries, but no vaccine for the rest of the world, could there be something else going on here? Well, there are lots of very, very serious considerations. And the one thing, of course, that brought to mind was the fact we were going to go ahead and vaccinate our troops for anthrax. Now, why did we want to vaccinate our troops for anthrax? Well, because anthrax, pulmonary anthrax, is a terrible disease, and it is. But the vaccine, you know, is only good if you know the type of organism that's going to be used. There are well over 120 different subtypes of anthrax or variations of it. And, of course, the vaccine is only good for a small number of those. So the only reason that you would give the vaccine is if you were going to use the use the anthrax yourself, because then you would know the type, and you could have design a vaccine that would protect your troops. But of course, it wouldn't protect the rest of the people, and that's a terrible thing to contemplate. But I do not know any other reason why we're having the problems. We would want to vaccinate our troops, and nobody wants to say that. And then, of course, this same thing comes true with smallpox. They want to get a large number of people vaccinated so that they can vaccinate the entire American population if there's a smallpox attack. Well, smallpox, if it were released in the world at this time, would kill off about a third of the world's population. Because the younger people have no immunity at all. I mean, this has killed, you know, hundreds of millions of people through the years. I mean, it's it killed off the Indians here in the United States because they had no immunity, and we have a whole generation of people who have no immunity to smallpox. What are they really talking about? Why do they want to immunize the American people unless they know there's going to be a smallpox attack? Why are they ignoring the experts that that called in? The only reason to do this vaccination the way we're doing it is if we know there's going to be a smallpox attack and the American people will be vaccinated, and maybe the people of Israel will be vaccinated, and, of course, maybe one or two European countries. But this would decimate the Muslim population. It would decimate the African population. It would decimate the Asian population. This is a frightening thing to contemplate. But is it possible that there could be something that evil in the world? Well, I'm going to go in just a moment to Bruce Adamson, who's calling in. But there was a report today of a vaccine trial for AIDS. It was really very interesting. It was a long-term trial with about 5,000 people, high risk, to find out if this new vaccine, Vaxgen, I think is the, and it, I think it uses a carrier, some sort of a virus, to get a GP120 into the body. And GP120 is a molecule that you see on the a shell of the HIV virus. And one reason why many people think this is an engineered or genetically created virus is because it has GP120 on it. Well, of course, the results of this test showed that with a white population, and primarily white and black homosexuals in the United States, I think there were 300 women, but primarily white and black homosexuals, and predominantly white, it didn't do any good for the whites at all, cutting down on the spread of the disease. But it did help the blacks. It helped, and actually, it had a two-thirds. There was 60% protection, you know, when you got this whole study laid out. 60% of them were protected. 30% of them got the disease, you know, of those that got infected. But the dramatic difference between black and white, which, of course, is what I've always felt. I believe that this disease was originally engineered to take out the black. Now, why would I say that? Well, first of all, we have the testimony before the House Appropriations Committee in 1969 by Dr. MacArthur. If any of you want to read it, we'll be glad to send it to you. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send it to you. But Dr. MacArthur testified before the House Appropriations Committee on Military Affairs back in 1969 or for 1969 that we had the capacity to create a disease for which there'd be no immune response, and a second disease that would chronically disable people but wouldn't kill them. All they needed was $10 million, and of course there were some people thought that there were some moral considerations on this, but the Army had the ability to create that disease. Had the ability to create a disease that would destroy the immune system, for which there'd be no defense, no immune defense. And 6 years later, the first cases appeared, about 1976. And of course, they appeared in large part, the beginning, in homosexuals who'd taken the hepatitis B vaccine in the New York area. And pretty soon, of course, we know that the San Francisco cohort, where they were given the hepatitis B vaccine in 1978, and of those young people, idealistic, foolish people with this sexual addiction that's so characteristic of homosexuality, almost 80% of the young men who took the hepatitis B vaccine came down with AIDS, and most of them have died. Well, why would 80% of them get that when the incidence of disease in the general promiscuous homosexual population was only a fraction of that? Well, I believe there was something in the vaccine, and I believe that it was designed specifically much more for the black than for the white. And of course, you have to go back to our four-tape set on genocide, the interview with Dr. Dunnigan, who had actually heard Dr. Day, who was the medical director of Planned Parenthood, saying, we're going to create new diseases that will kill off the blacks. We're going to create new diseases that will kill off the blacks. Why should they have Africa? And then, of course, you have to, of course, look and see what's happened in Africa where, for instance, in Botswana, 39% of the adult population is infected and they're all going to die. You have to understand that we have a different disease in the United States than they have in Africa than they have in Thailand. There are actually a number of different HIV strains. Where did they all come from? They suddenly occurred out of no place. We have type O and type M, and M, we have A, B, C, D, and E, different subtypes of this, and we have HIV-1, and we have HIV-2, and the only place you find HIV-2 is in laboratory monkeys. You don't find it in the wild. You don't find HIV-1 in the wild either. And there were people who wanted to create diseases. There was an article that appeared in 1987, as I recall, in the London Times, written by the editor of the London Times, saying that he had met a man who was working in Africa and said that they were putting the disease to the people in the vaccines. And I think he was talking about the smallpox vaccinations that were being used over there in Africa. Never republished in the United States. See, I wonder why that article, lead article on the front page of the London Times, never got in the United States. Are there wicked people? Are there people that wicked that would actually create disease to kill millions and millions of people? Well, about 30 million people have died of AIDS so far throughout the world. Another 42 million are infected and waiting to die, and most of them will die. And the disease is just beginning to develop in India and China and is spreading over there really fairly rapidly. If we have a public health policy, it's a terrible failure. If it's a genocidal policy, it's a very good one. And now, of course, we're talking about a smallpox epidemic. And if it occurs, I want you to remember what I said tonight, it will decimate the people of the rest of the world. But, of course, they'll have vaccine for the American people. Doesn't that make you feel good? Or should you feel good about it? Should you be concerned? Because every human being is made in the image and likeness of God. And we are to be our brother's keepers, not because we're our brother's brother, but because we have a common father. All men are brothers only because we have a common father. Well, with that as a thought, I'm going to go to Bruce, who's calling in, Bruce Adamson, I've known for many, many years. And if, incidentally, if you're out there in the audience and you'd like to call, you agree or disagree with what we've been saying, give us a call. But our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Bruce Adamson just called in to volunteer as a guest, so I wouldn't have to talk all by myself tonight. Bruce, how are you doing?
Down in L.A., and I was just put you up on the Internet, and I heard that you're guest in show, so I figured, well, what the heck? I've been there about 20 minutes, but
Well, I appreciate you so much for calling in. Well, tell us, have you got anything new now for our listeners out there who don't know? Bruce is the world's leading authority on George de Moorenschild, who was Lee Harvey Oswald's mentor. Lee Harvey Oswald was obviously involved with intelligence and the CIA. Certainly de Moorenschild was involved with the CIA, and Bruce was actually able to get a copy of his address book after he supposedly committed suicide in Florida. The very day he was being subpoenaed to appear before the House Select Committee on Assassination, and of course Bruce got that copy of the address book, and lo and behold, why, there's the name of George Herbert Walker Bush and so many other the key players in what's going on in the world. And certainly there seems to be no question in your mind, is there, Bruce, that de Moorenschild, George de Moorenschild, Lee Harvey Oswald's mentor, was deeply involved with the CIA?
Well, yeah, his father-in-law was in charge of 250 CIA agents from 50 to 53. And so this is the relative of Lee Harvey Oswald's best friend. So, 10 years before the assassination.
Well, of course, de Moorenschild had ties to Lyndon Johnson.
And Henry Kissinger. And Henry Kissinger, according to David Horowitz, was responsible for AIDS virus and was...
No, that would be Len Horowitz.
Len Horowitz, so that's right.
Right, Len Horowitz.
I met him down in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, right about the time of the Oklahoma bombing in 1995.
Right.
And I was doing research down there, and my motorhome broke down. He was really into it and real enthusiastic. I didn't know a lot about what he was doing, but one of the common connections between Leonard Horowitz and de Moorenschild was that de Moorenschild had an entry in his phone book for George Merck, the pharmaceutical guy, and who worked with the Department of War during World War II, and was responsible for a lot of programs.
Of course, so there's a serious question whether Merck was involved with the creation of the AIDS virus. Certainly, there's no question at all that the government spent hundreds of millions of dollars creating new viruses under the Cancer Research Program. And if there is, then, of course, orders were given by the CIA to destroy all of those records. And the exact quotation is found in a book by Don Scott, unusual of Skull Valley incident, something like that. And anyway, we do carry the book, and yeah, it actually has a reference from the published book, where of course the head of the CIA orders all of these special cancer virus project records were to be destroyed, were to be shredded. Why? Because they didn't want the American people ever to learn about how they'd been creating new diseases for mass genocide. And of course, the thing about the AIDS virus is it's specific for blacks. And you look at the statistics today, and I just got these statistics out of Virginia today, 65% of new AIDS cases are in blacks, and probably the population is not more than 30% there, 25 or 30%. So there is a predilection for blacks. They know that. Always been part of the agenda was to kill off the blacks in this world, and it's about time the good people understood that and realized that we're dealing with organized evil.
They had something on the news tonight. I didn't catch the whole detail, but about a vaccine for Asians and blacks. So whether how much merit it has, it said they may take years to know how good it is. But
well, they haven't quite figured out the reason that this seems to work better for blacks than for whites. This vaccine is because the organism attacks blacks much more than it does whites, and of course I believe it was genetically modified. They've had the ability for years to create diseases that will wipe out specific racial groups. In fact, that's one of the things that's mentioned in Rebuilding America's Defenses, the report that comes out from the Project for the New American Century. And anybody would like the reference to that, I can get them the exact page, or I'll send it to them, about racial-specific types of diseases. Why? Because bacterial diseases that will kill certain races. What a wonderful idea if you want to kill off certain races in the world today. And there really are people who are racist, and they're some of the most powerful people in the world today.
Well, one thing I noticed about the anthrax problem was that it happened, you know, we hadn't had very many cases of anthrax for like 30 years before, you know, this last episode. And then all of a sudden we start getting these anthrax cases, and it's like a year or 2 years. I think the patent on Cipro expires this year, so it's like you wonder. It's a German-based company, Bayer Aspirin, that makes Cipro. That's the antidote for anthrax, and it's like all of a sudden they're getting these billion-dollar contracts through George Bush for producing Cipro, and their patent runs out in 1 year. Is it convenient? Why haven't we had these anthrax problems 30 years ago? I mean, why was it so long? Or, you know, why all of a sudden?
And well, I think what you have to...
somebody capitalized.
The reason that we had the anthrax was because somebody put this into the mail. And, of course, what's really so interesting in my last newsletter, I covered this, that the Army, the Defense Department, had contracted with a contractor to find out how you could send this through the mail. And, of course, this contractor came up with the idea of certain size of the particles and a certain number of particles in a letter, and that was exactly what was sent through the mail. In other words, exactly according to that recommendation. And, of course, it was a type of anthrax. It had come from our military laboratories. It had been specially treated so that there's some sort of a coating on the spores so they wouldn't clump together, other treatments so that there would be no electric static charge to bind it together, so it would be readily airborne. This was a very sophisticated type of arrangement. It was planned long ahead of time because you would have to be vaccinated so that you wouldn't contract the disease if you were handling this and putting this into mailboxes. So whoever did this obviously had worked with anthrax, had been vaccinated
They did not use military-grade anthrax on the people in Florida. Only they say they use military-grade anthrax on Tom Daschle's letter and a couple of the other letters. But if it was military-grade anthrax, the people would have died instantaneously.
No, you wouldn't. You get pulmonary anthrax, and it takes several days before it kills you. And you don't die immediately from anthrax. What happens is it gets into your lungs and it infects the lungs, and then there's tremendous toxicity. And actually, of course, if you give the people massive antibiotics, most of them recovered. I think there were only 5 people who died. I think there were probably 13 people that got the pulmonary anthrax. 18 people got it all together, but about 5 of them were certainly cutaneous. But the people who've recovered are having terrible problems with their minds and with concentration because of the effect of the toxicity on their brains.
That Cipro is pretty strong medicine. I was taking Cipro, I told you, for an infection, and this 6 months ago, and I developed the shingles from the Cipro. So, I mean, if you're under stress and you're taking Cipro, it can really mess you up.
And, of course, the thing is, Cipro is a potentially dangerous drug because it seems to attack the collagenous structure, and there's a marked increase in the incidence of rupture of the Achilles tendon and other tendons in the body when you're taking Cipro. And yet, of course, the Vice President, Dick Cheney, was concerned enough about a anthrax attack that he and his staff all went on a 6-week course of Cipro on the evening of September 11, 2001. So obviously they suspected, or they knew an attack was coming. Gee, I wonder why they didn't tell anybody else, why they protected themselves and then, of course, didn't protect the rest of the country. And the other thing, of course, doxycycline works just as well. But, of course, the government bought a massive amount of Cipro. They bought it at 3 times the price.
The value.
3 times the price of what it should have been. And, of course, somebody made off like bandits.
Yeah, and Bayer aspirin.
Right.
So, and it's a German-based company.
Well, there are lots of things that go on like this behind the scenes. And special companies are given special rights. The people who are making the anthrax vaccine have made a tremendous amount of money on this. Of course, it's just coincidence. The former head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Crowe, who backed Bill Clinton publicly when he ran for re-election, just happened to be given an awful lot of shares of that stock. Could there have been perhaps why they got the contract and nobody else did? We'll be back here in just a moment here on Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and, of course, our guest this evening is Bruce Adamson. And, of course, if you're out there across America and you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Larry Nichols was supposed to be our guest this evening, but for one reason or another, he didn't wasn't available. So Bruce is here, and if you have any questions at all about George de Morenschild, because he is such a key figure in this whole Kennedy assassination. Now, I have no question at all that the CIA killed President Kennedy, and I base this upon this new book that we're carrying entitled Regicide. It was made up of the private papers, personal papers of Mr. Robert Crowley, who was Deputy Assistant Director of the covert operations for the CIA, and when he became incapacitated, he gave these papers to Mr. Gregory Douglas. I think he wanted the American people to know why they killed President Kennedy. They felt that they were justified, and of course, this is the smoking gun. But of course, this overlaps with what Bruce has found, and that is the strong ties between Lee Harvey Oswald and de Morenschild, and de Morenschild and the Central Intelligence Agency. The Central Intelligence Agency couldn't let the American people know that they not only killed people throughout the world, like Mr. Diem and Mr. Nu and Trujillo in the Dominican Republic and Patrice Lumumba over in Nigeria, and I don't know how many other heads of state that they had killed, but they'd killed an American president. And they got away with it because, of course, the government is still concealing all those records. They're still, most of these are almost impossible to get out under the Freedom of Information Act. And with the new Bush administration, why, we won't be getting anything, because they've told the officials to totally ignore the law. And they'll back them up if they don't give any Freedom of Information Act information out there. So we're going to have real problems now. And if there's nothing to conceal, why is the government going to conceal it from the American people? But I really believe that the CIA killed Kennedy. And if you read the book Regicide, I think you'll be convinced of that as well. And they've covered it up all this time, and they've killed anybody who tried to get in the way, just as they killed Lee Harvey Oswald. And I believe that Jack Ruby was killed as well. What do you think about that, Bruce?
Well, I think that I have a new CD with 14 volumes on it, and I'm willing to give 30% of Radio Liberty if anybody who wants to buy one.
You can't put the price out, at least not on this.
No, I wouldn't do that. Ahead. Yeah, I know that.
But we appreciate your mentioning that. And, if
and it's on your website there.
All right, people can go to our website, and then they'll link directly to your website, won't they?
No, they'll be able to contact you and order the CD. They get all 14 volumes on pertaining to the JFK assassination, which is 11 years of my life and more than $160,000 in research and expenses, for all on a CD that works with IBM and Mac computers.
The same one that works for both of them?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
and
amazing technology, isn't it?
Well, John Barrymore helped me do it. He does these computer programs, and he helped me do it, and I'm just really thankful that he did that. And the last time he had me on, we were talking about that movie, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Right, uh-huh.
And I went and watched the movie, and I didn't like the movie. I thought it was not good, but I did like Drew Barrymore's acting in it. And I am very proud that I have designed the website for the Barrymore family, and one could get to that from my website, but it's just been really an escape, you know, from the JFK thing, because I like family history, doing research, and the Barrymore family has, you know, a very interesting family, and I just really was excited, and I found over 300 photographs that are up on that people can view on the website for free, you know, and that's at BarrymoreFamily.com.
And you, that's actually a website you put together for them.
I put together for their family, yeah.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners about this, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, because
what's
that story really all about?
I think it's actually, I thought Drew Barrymore was the whole movie. I thought she was great, you know, and but I didn't like the movie. I thought it was, and it was a way of, you know, the CIA puts a lot of money into Hollywood, and when they want a script done, you know, people will get the script and they'll do it. You know, there's been a lot of movies. Julia Roberts was in that. They had George Clooney. They had a great cast, but it just didn't make it. It's not worth the... Personally, I didn't think the movie had it.
Well, now, basically, there was this gentleman who had actually claimed he had been a CIA operative.
Assassin.
Assassin, right. So who was he?
He's a game show host.
There?
And that's what the whole thing about the movie is. I get the feeling that the CIA poured the money into making this movie because they want to recruit CIA assassins. And they were trying to glorify Chuck Barris's life, how he was this game show host, and that he can have all these benefits in life and make his own movies and you know, make his own TV shows. And what Chuck Barris, when he wrote the book, he said it was fiction, but when he makes the movie, he makes it like it's a true story.
Well, I think that you could write a book of fiction based upon real-life occurrences. Do you think that's what the book was really all about? In other words,
well, what Chuck Barris doesn't want to talk about is that his uncle, by marriage, William S. Paley, employed George de Bornschild, a real-life CIA assassin. Now, I think Chuck Barris, if he's going to profit off these type of movies, he has an obligation to be truthful to the American public.
So he is related to George, to Mr. Paley?
Paley, William S. Paley, not the founder of CBS. Chuck Barris's father-in-law founded CBS, and that's Leon Levy, L-E-V-Y. And his brother-in-law, Robert Levy, was Robert Paley Levy. So his uncle, Leon Levy married Blanche Paley, the sister of William S. Paley, to make it simple.
All right, fine. Well, of course, the thing is that the CIA does have assassins. I actually talked to one. His name was L.D. Howard. Of course, he didn't kill anybody. He wouldn't do it when he found out he was supposed to be killing not a Mexican warlord, but or drug lord, but an American who was there with his wife and a couple of children. And, of course, that turned out to be Terry Reed, who had actually written a book about George Herbert Walker Bush and William Clinton called Compromised. And, of course, I guess that was the end of L.D. Howard's work for the CIA as an assassin. But the fact that they can assassinate people and get away with it is really incredible. I'm doing an interview tomorrow with a gentleman, Dr. Colin Ross, a psychiatrist, and he's talking about the CIA mind control operations, Bluebird, where they intentionally created dissociative personalities and literally hundreds if not thousands of people by trauma-based conditioning. And he bases this on some 18,000 pages of released CIA records that he was able to get his hands onto. And of course, nobody's ever held responsible for this. They intentionally destroyed the minds of people. And of course, what was even more frightening is an awful lot of physicians, an awful lot of doctors went right along with it. They published the articles in the medical journals. Oh, these wonderful things that we can do with the human mind.
Well,
they were destroying the mind. And this was all being funded with our tax money. And, of course, the Manchurian candidates, they were working on creating Manchurian-type of candidates based upon trauma-type brainwashing. But even more than that, of course, we've always said, oh, well, we had to do that because the wicked North Koreans were doing this. We had to learn what they were doing. We were doing this long before the North Koreans ever thought about doing it.
Did you ever see the movie, The Manchurian Candidate?
Oh, I sure did.
Now, did you know that that is a CIA-sponsored movie?
I wouldn't be at all surprised.
The movie that made the company that made the movie was Universal, a clothing company, a woman's apparel company. And they originally made the movie The OSS, a 1948 movie, I think, about the OSS, which was the forerunner of the CIA. But
why do you think, though, that the CIA put out that story on the Manchurian Candidate?
Well, the leading actor is Lawrence Harvey, like Lee Harvey, and it's a U.S. Marine who comes out in 62, who's brainwashed to kill the president. And why would they seal the movie for 25 years? Frank Sinatra had an interest in the movie, and when they released the movie, Arthur Krim was the one that released it. He said to Frank Sinatra, you need to go to President Kennedy and get permission in order for me to release this movie. Well, Arthur Krim and his partner...
What do you mean it was sealed for 25 years?
They sealed the movie. It was not on the market for 25 years after the assassination of Kennedy. And they only released it probably 10, 15 years ago.
Wait a minute. Now, when did the movie
came out?
In probably
62.
In the 50s, didn't it?
62.
In 62?
Yes, right before the assassination. About this U.S. Marine named, and the leading actor is Lawrence Harvey, and he's a U.S. Marine who's brainwashed to kill the president. Well, the lawyers that represented Igor Cassini were the ones that released the movie, Arthur Krim and Louis Neisser.
Well, I mean, the movie was done, and then it wasn't released? It wasn't circulated?
Well, no, it was released, and then they sealed it right after the assassination. They didn't want it out on the market. And why would you do that if it was...
You mean, how did they seal the movie? How did they keep... You mean that you could not rent the movie?
They wouldn't show it. And then
But how do you know that they wouldn't show it? Was there any record that they actually...
Yeah, yes. It's public knowledge that they sealed the movie. They didn't let it out.
Well, they got Hollywood then not to release it, or what?
They just wouldn't show it. Nobody would show the movie, or they wouldn't sell any kind of video of it.
I got a video recently of it, and
now it's released. Yeah, it was released about 10 or 15 years ago. Frank Sinatra has an interest in the movie.
All right, well, fine. It was a very interesting.
It is an interesting movie. You look at, because he's looking down at this perch from a hotel across, like you're looking down at the theater. Where the president's going to speak, it was ominous. And Louis Neisser was Igor Cassini's lawyer in a prosecution which was brought by Robert F. Kennedy. And Igor Cassini, of course, is friends with George DeMornschild. And so there's all these interconnections, and then DeMornschild's a CIA agent.
But now, eventually, it was this gentleman, Cassini, who got the movie released?
No. Cassini had nothing to do with the movie.
Who got the movie released?
Louis Neisser and Arthur Krim. Arthur Krim was LBJ's personal advisor. And he's the president of United Artists in Hollywood. You know the.
Okay, fine. Did they eventually got it released?
Yes, they released it in '62 before the assassination.
But when was it re-released after that?
I don't know the exact year, but I think Frank Sinatra was the one that got it re-released.
Because
after the smoke cleared.
In the movie, why of course the person who was the. Controller is Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, that was it was a real good movie, you know, but it was just ominous, you know.
Well, I think even more ominous. Maybe it was just said in jest. I don't know. But when John McCain, Senator John McCain, was running for the presidency, and somebody asked him, of course, why he wanted to run. Of course, many people, of course, felt that he had been brainwashed when he was a prisoner of the Viet Cong for such a long period of time. And of course, he had done everything he could to undermine efforts to bring any of the other veterans home. The veterans concerned about the boys we abandoned, they hate John McCain.
I thought it was honorable of him not to want to go back when his comrades are there, even though his father and his grandfather were, you know, way up top of the Navy.
He did everything he could to block within the Senate efforts to try to find out what happened to the boys we abandoned, and that's why they hate him. That and the fact that he went over to the Viet Cong and gave them all the information. Everybody else was tortured, and they held out, and he gave them everything they wanted. And of course, he was known as the Prince. And he had luxury accommodations, and it said that, of course, they have all sorts of pictures of him with women. We don't know that's to be true. But it was so interesting when he was asked by a reporter, and we have the article from Newsweek magazine, he was asked, why do you want to run for the presidency? And he replied, because Angela Lansbury turned over the Queen of Diamonds.
Well, that was weird.
Yeah, what a weird statement for a man who's running for the presidency, who's been a prisoner of the Viet Cong, who actually went over to the Viet Cong, who helped the Viet Cong and should have been tried for treason.
Well, I trust...
Of course, he is now a United States senator. And the fact that most Americans have never heard that simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think.
I don't agree with everything that John McCain does, but I, at least... To me, you know what you're getting. With Bush, you don't know what you're getting. And I don't like anybody that's been given everything on a silver platter like Bush, who's spoiled and doesn't know how to be a good loser, who claims to be a Christian, yet is stands behind murder and slaughter. And
no, wait a minute. What do you mean he stands behind murder and slaughter?
Well, he's a Texas... Any Christian, if you're a Christian, you won't execute people. Whether you're the governor of Texas or anything, you wouldn't be a Skull and Bones member. You can't be a Christian and go around killing people.
No, well, now, wait a minute. As the governor of the state, he would
he
be,
executed,
of course,
what? How many people on death row?
Well, the question would be if, you know, in the Bible it says, you know, if a man sheds blood, then his blood may be shed. It is not anti-Christian to support capital punishment.
Well... It's anti-Christian to go around creating wars and getting involved in
wars. That is a different... I would not argue with you on that at all.
A Christian will communicate and talk. They won't belong to skull and bone secret societies and evil societies like you have guests that say that all the time. You know, that's my opinion. It's from the heart.
All right, fine. I know it is, Bruce. But I certainly am not disagreeing with you. I would feel far better if the president would repudiate the secret oaths he swore to Skull and Bones, and certainly would not be bringing all the members of Skull and Bones, or some members of Skull and Bones, into key positions in his administration. And that, you know, in his book, his autobiography, he said, I was a member of Skull and Bones, but it's so secret, I can't write anything about it. Now, why would a president belong to a secret society that is so secret he couldn't write anything about it? I would think he'd be very concerned, and he would renounce those oaths that he'd sworn And when he asked the question by a reporter one time, is it, what about Skull and Bones? He said, oh, is that still around? Well, of course, he knew it was around. I would think he would have given an honest, straightforward answer, because if there's nothing to conceal, why conceal it? What is Skull and Bones really all about? Why did they...
Money.
So many
they have a lot of money.
Skull and Bones, who had really sworn these oaths never to reveal any of their secrets, of course, break their oaths, or supposedly break their oaths, to give Alexander Robbins all this inside information on that. When, of course, nobody ever talks about that, unless they were specifically creating disinformation to, of course, allay any apprehension about the secret society that the president belonged to. And, of course, her book has gotten great play, and I think Alexandra's a very nice lady, and I believe that she's very sincere in her book. But I really question whether the Skull and Bones fed her false information to throw off the track of what this secret society is really all about, and its tie to the other secret societies that dominate the successive administrations, whether they be a Democrat or Republican. Certainly, they dominate banking in this country. They dominate the CIA. You'll find that these people, in every aspect of our society, in the media, people like William Buckley.
Sure.
Supposedly one of the leading conservatives, and yet, of course, if you look at his history, you find he's really not conservative at all, but he plays the part very well. And, of course, he's led an awful lot of conservatives to their own destruction.
And his dad employed George de Moorenschot.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
and William Buckley's father, was he probably was Skull and Bones, too, then, wasn't he?
Buckley Sr.?
Right.
I don't know much about...
We actually have the list. I'll have to look that up.
Well, I know Sutton has a good book on it, Anthony. But I know de Moorenschot was employed by William F. Buckley Sr. at Panapiki Oil, a Venezuelan oil company, in the mid-40s. And George Crewe McGee, a friend of de Moorenschot, was into that company. And also Nelson Rockefeller owned, I think, 20,000 shares of the stock. And, de Moorenschot was employed by Nelson Rockefeller during World War II in the Inter-American Affair. So there's just so many things, and, you know, there's so much about de Moorenschot, yet people, when they hear a name that they don't recognize, it seems like, well, people don't have time for wanting to know about people they don't know about. You know, and it's hard to sell people on. Everybody knows who Oswald is, but it's hard to sell them on trying to educate them on George de Moorenschot. And I've tried, and I keep going. I don't give up.
Well, of course, the thing is that Lee Harvey Oswald's, I mean, closest friend is this very sophisticated individual. Why was this fellow, spending a lot of time with Lee Harvey Oswald? Well, it is my opinion that de Moorenschot was Lee Harvey Oswald's handler for the CIA.
Definitely. No question about it.
And this is what people don't understand. Well, if Lee Harvey Oswald was working for the CIA, why did they kill him? Well,
that's
they
right.
had to get rid of him because they had to pin the assassination of President Kennedy on Lee Harvey Oswald. Why did Jack Ruby walk into a building, surrounded by police officers, and kill Lee Harvey Oswald? And nobody ever asked that intelligent question. Why would anybody do anything that stupid? It wasn't stupid at all. Certainly, Jack Ruby was given an offer he couldn't refuse by the mafia, and that's covered in a book called Double Cross. They just told him they would torture him to death, and they would torture his whole family to death. When you get an order from the head of the mafia, you carry it out. And, of course, he assumed that they would be able to get him out of prison. Eventually, when he realized, of course, his life was in danger and he wasn't going to get out of prison, he told the members of the Warren Commission that he would, of course, tell the truth. He would, if they'd just get him out of the jail there in Texas, he'd tell them exactly what happened. And he suddenly developed an acute case of cancer and promptly died. A most amazing thing. Just like so many of the other people, we have a book called The Dead Witnesses. Over 100 people affiliated with one or another aspect of the assassination all died mysteriously. And of course, I don't believe they died at all. I believe that they were killed by the Central Intelligence Agency to keep the truth from coming out.
Well, it's been a real pleasure digging and digging and digging and, trying to educate some people. And, this CD is really neat just because it's, I'm able to put 1,800 pages on a CD and it's a lot less work for me, and I can drop the price by 1/4.
Well, anyway, Chris, the interesting thing is that you've got, what, 13 or 14 volumes of it?
14 volumes on the CD, and I'll donate 30% to Radio Liberty. Those people that feel that it's about time they want to educate themselves on the CIA agent, then just contact Stan at the link on the first page.
Radio Liberty. Go to the Radio Liberty.
RadioLiberty.com. And there's an 800 number, and Mary will take your order, and I'll pop it in the mail, and, I'll take care of.
Okay, well, I appreciate your willingness to support Radio Liberty here, and of course that all helps to keep us going on the air, and hopefully we're going to be able to gradually continue expanding our ministry, reaching out to more and more people across America on a regular basis. Well, of course, our telephone number, if you're out there in the listening audience, we'd love to hear from you. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and I guess everybody must be watching television tonight. It's so quiet. We haven't had that many calls. I do appreciate so much your calling in here tonight, Bruce.
I just saw that you didn't have the guest, so I figured, well, and feel free to call on me anytime. Sometimes I'm able to carry the ball, and, other times
You do very, very well. You've got a phenomenal amount of information. And
I have a good memory.
I had no idea about the relationship between, of course, Des Moines Schelt and a couple of people you mentioned this evening. I mean, his ties to certainly Nelson Rockefeller and his...
Henry Kissinger.
And Henry Kissinger and that other fellow he worked for that you were mentioning.
James Billington?
I didn't know about. Was he tied to James Billington? No, you were talking about.
Des Moines Schelt was friends with Billington, and so was Dimitri. Yeah.
You're talking about James H. Billington?
Or no, you were talking about Buckley Senior.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Not James H. Billington.
Well, no, he's tied to the Des Moines Schelt family too, and he's CIA. But that's okay.
That's James H. Billington.
The current Librarian of Congress. He's also descended from the first convicted murderer in the United States.
Well, he's a brilliant individual. I'm indebted to him for writing the book, Fire in the Minds of Men. Certainly one of the five most important books in my library. And
well, maybe we can sell him a CD on Des Moines Schelt.
God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us, Bruce.
Okay, Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And of course, this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family. And when you do, of course, you'll get our four best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us get the truth out across America. And so, as you know, we're on the radio 5 hours every day and Internet 5 hours a day. And you can actually pull us down at RadioLiberty.com. 3 hours of our programs are archived there. And then we do another hour on the American Freedom Network, another hour on the Genesis Network, and you'll have to, of course, get the tapes there. Although their programs are certainly on the Internet, I don't know necessarily that they are regularly archived. And then, of course, we hope you'll tell other people about our Internet programs and that you'll tell them about the radio programs we put on, because that's how we'll be able to reach out across America and get people thinking, and our audience is growing, and hopefully it will just keep growing and growing as more and more people become aware of the true nature of the battle in which we're engaged, because it's not an ideological battle or a cultural battle or a political battle. It's a spiritual battle. And, of course, increasingly it should become obvious to anybody who's watching what's going on that there are forces working behind the scenes that most people have very little knowledge of. As I'm reading this book for a program we're going to do tomorrow with Colin Ross, it becomes so obvious to evil that psychiatrists would destroy people's minds just as part of an experiment, in the same way that physicians across America would tolerate the Tuskegee study. And only one doctor had the courage to write to the CDC and said, what you are doing in withholding treatment for the syphilis of these 400 black men that you have in your study is immoral. There was only one professor when they actually called a special group together to ask doctors what they thought of this study, and only one of them, out of I think 11 or 12, a professor from University of Tennessee, got up and said, what you're doing is wrong. It's immoral to withhold treatment from people and while their syphilis ravages their minds and their hearts and their bodies. But the rest of the doctors went along with it. What's wrong? What's happened to the soul of America? And I think that with people like that, this is not the average doctor, but these are the people in academia. These are the people that are the scientists. And yes, of course, some of the psychiatrists were just everyday scientists, got a nice contract with the CDC, with the CIA, and they were well paid for the betrayal of their patients. This thing could go on in America, and there's no outcry. This is what's so disturbing to me. And it's so disturbing to Dr. Colin Ross. I hope we can get him on here some evening so you can hear him. I will be interviewing him first thing in the morning, tomorrow morning, on my early morning program. That's the American Freedom Network. And, of course, on Bluebird. And that was Operation Bluebird. It was a CIA operation to destroy the minds of people all across America. And, of course, create dissociated personalities and then implant false memories or then use these people for their nefarious purposes, some of them as Manchurian candidates, perhaps some of them as professional assassins. How can you justify this? Oh, in the name of the common defense, we've got to fight those wicked communists. They're the enemy. Well, is the communist the enemy or is it the people who are doing this? And, of course, as we pointed out repeatedly, communism has been financed by people of great wealth within the Brotherhood of Darkness since its inception. Well, we're out of time. Pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. And of course, pray for America. Pray for our boys who will soon be going into battle. Pray for the Iraqi civilians. Pray for the people of Israel. And of course, pray for peace in the Holy Land. And so, until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Let's see if the radio's coming back on again. Satellite went out there for a time. I guess we're out of, this satellite must be off. We'll have to talk to the engineer, Kevin. Well, we sure didn't get that many calls in the second hour.
I'm glad that Bruce called them.
That last caller,
His
name's Eric, and he just wanted you to know that we're not all watching television.
It was amazed about the guy that thinks Christians should not support the death penalty. Which I agree too.
Well, Bruce means very well, but he really doesn't understand Christianity.
A lot of interesting things to say.
Well, if you have somebody to talk to, you can bring out some of the ideas. It's still an educational process to put the people out there listening. It's amazing. I thought the program with Bill Sardi was really very interesting.
8 o'clock show was really interesting.
Yeah, the soup then. Yeah. That's the challenge. Worcester debate. How about that? Eat creamer. You know, the thing is that we live in a world of that. It's so good. You know, about what's going on. You know, of course, the division and the conservative movement about this issue. And there's so many good people out there. But, actually,
sound like
something down. Yeah. But, you know, on the other side, I got this one email from